Well, good morning. Happy Easter. Okay, man, I think. All right, let's. Amy warmed you up for this, so let's see. He is risen.
He is risen.
Ooh, okay, let's try that again. Okay, I think the intent behind that is a little more. Okay, so let's try it again. He is risen. Oh, there we go. That's awesome. Man, I am so glad you're here today. You may or may not know this. Easter is kind of a big deal to Christians and people who follow Jesus. I love the pastors or the people that work in churches, and they go, well, you know, every day, every Sunday is special. Let's stop fooling ourselves. It's a big day, right? I mean, we celebrate something very significant that happened. And so because it's a big day, it makes me nervous. I mean, I'm like, oh my goodness, I don't want to say something wrong. And so sometimes I'll go out and I'll say, okay, what do other preachers say on Easter Sunday? Let's just see if we can figure this out. Because I'm just curious, what's the right thing to say? And you know, sometimes pastors will defend the resurrection, and they'll say, let me give you three reasons why we know the resurrection happened. Or they'll say, message, I'm sorry, I just got distracted because I saw that the computer rebooted on Easter. It hasn't done this in months, and there you go. So now that you're looking there as well, that's why it says no signal. Don't worry, it'll be back up in a second. You know, so there's a lot of things that pastors might say on Easter, but a few years ago, I remember listening to an Easter sermon. It's by a pastor in Georgia. His name's Andy Stanley. And he made this statement in the sermon. He said, if a man can predict his own death and resurrection and pull it off, I just go with whatever that man says. And I thought about that, and I think, man, that's a really cool statement. Because that's exactly who we say Jesus is and what we believe Jesus did. And on the surface, it sounds great, and I agree. But I think about Jesus, and you know what? He came and he lived for about 33 years. His actual ministry was only about 3 years, and he went around teaching, and he was in the synagogues, and he taught on the hillsides, and he taught from boats, and they traveled together, and he taught as they traveled down the roadways. And when he taught, people actually took notice. People paid attention. Like, people were very interested in what he said because they looked at him and they said, how does he know all this? How does he preach as someone that has authority? And so he had this kind of buzz around him. But not only that, because he did miracles. He did a lot of miracles. He did a lot of amazing things. Like, he gave people sight who were blind. He helped people who were deaf to hear again. He turned water into wine. And we're not talking about the cheap stuff. We're talking about the good stuff. That's what he did. He's got that kind of power. Leprosy, we don't see much anymore. But, I mean, skin disease, basically your skin's falling off. He was able to touch people in a culture that didn't want people like that to be touched. And he healed them. And even people who were paralyzed, he was able to help them to walk again. And he even brought other people back from the dead. You know, as I think about Jesus, when he was here, he challenged the status quo. He pushed back against conventional wisdom because the Jewish people were under the Roman oppression and they didn't like it. And so they were looking for a political revolution. And Jesus pushed back against that. There was a religious establishment that literally wore their religion on their sleeves and in their robes and everything that they wore. They wore their religion outwardly. And Jesus came in. And he pushed against all that because he said things like, love your enemies and turn the other cheek. And he talked about a faith that was real, but it wasn't necessarily only because you could see it, but it was seen because it was something coming from the inside. And Jesus harshly criticized the religious leaders who paid more attention to the outside. And Jesus said, stop worrying about the outside, worry about the inside. You see, Jesus did in his ministry predict his death and resurrection. And on that fateful Friday, Jesus was brutally beaten and nailed to a cross until his physical body just couldn't go on anymore. And on that cross, he breathed his last breath and he died. But then something happened. Something truly amazing and miraculous, something that had not been done before, because on that Friday where they had taken his lifeless body off the cross and they put it in a borrowed tomb, his body was there. And so on Sunday morning, his friends the women who had been with him decided it's time to go prepare the body. They couldn't on Saturday. It was against the Jewish custom. So on Sunday, they decided to go, and they have their spices and everything with them in tow. And here they are going off to the tomb. And when they begin to approach it, they see something is off. Because they were afraid somebody would steal the body, they put a big rock in front of it. But as they walk up to that, that rock is moved. As they peek their heads inside the tomb, all they see are the empty grave clothes that they had put around Jesus, and he was not there. And over the course of 40 days, Jesus appeared to people, person after person. He talked to them. He ate with them. He showed them his scars on his hands and his feet and his side. He did all these things. He did exactly what he said he was going to do. And as much as I like that statement from Andy Stanley, to just go with everything Jesus said, I personally can't get around a nagging tension that seems to exist. It sits right within me. I want to go with it, but it doesn't always line up. Because I know sometimes that what I see Jesus say and do isn't what I would say and do, and therefore it puts me in conflict. And I am forced to make a choice. Am I going to go with what Jesus said, or am I going to trust myself? And the tension begins not just with what Jesus said, but it really was in who Jesus was and is. You know, in our culture today, we love celebrities. We love to read People magazine. We see television shows like Extra and TMZ, and I don't know, I really don't watch those. But for some reason in our culture, we have this fascination with celebrity. We're willing to do, you know, anything and everything to follow them. We want to see them on Facebook, and we'll follow their Instagrams and love to see their Insta stories and all this. We want to know everything about their lives. What do they eat? What do they drink? What are they wearing? Who do they hang out with? And we kind of have this fascination, and I never really thought I had this because I'm like, well, who are you? I don't care. You just have more money than me and you get on television. That's fine. I had a weekly web show called Brent and Ryan in the Morning and it was awesome. So there you go. Anybody can do it. But this summer we went to, that's right, there it is right there. That's how most of them went. Me looking at Ryan laughing at something crazy he'd said. But this summer we went, my family and I had the opportunity to go to New York City. And before we went, I was able to secure 4 tickets to see Live with Kelly and Ryan. They do an okay job. They're no Brent and Ryan in the Morning, but they're okay. I did walk out of that show going, looking at my family, because it was me and Carrie and Liz and Hannah, and I said, wow, that's an hour of my life I will never get back. They talk about nothing. If you love that show, be offended, I don't care. So while we're in the audience and we're watching the show, we're down on the main level, we're on the back row because we were crazy enough to get up at like 5:30 in the morning and go stand in line because, hey, why not, right? And so we're there on the back row, and during the commercial breaks, because it is actually a live show most of the time, so Ryan Seacrest begins to work the crowd. Now, Kelly does not move in the crowd. She's a little evidently stuck up. I don't know. She didn't want to come talk to the normal people, but Ryan was willing. And so during each break, you could kind of see him going. And then during one of the commercial breaks, this happened. Amazing, right? And I'm like, oh, look, it's Ryan Seacrest. And I'm like, this is cool. I don't know why it's cool. He puts his pants on one leg at a time, just like I do. Why I show you this picture is because I wouldn't have thought I was starstruck until you really notice. Sorry, I'm walking out of the shot here. 2 of my children are back here. And in that moment, I'd forgotten I had children. Hannah, after the picture was taken, she's like, are you kidding me? You couldn't even see me. And I'm like, sorry, I met Ryan Seacrest. That's just how it is. I didn't think I was a guy that would be enamored with celebrity, but in that moment, I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. And he is really short, by the way. As a society, for some reason, we put a huge value on celebrity and on status. I mean, we think something like this may be cool, but when we look at Jesus, we see something completely different. And yeah, he drew large crowds. I mean, who wouldn't? I mean, if you heard of about a man that was healing diseases and blind people were seeing and all this stuff was happening, I'd be going to check it out. I mean, I'd be curious. So he drew these large crowds, and people clamored to hear what he had to say and to see what amazing thing he would do that day. But at the end of his life, when it was all said and done, even his closest friends, those who had walked with him for 3 years, the guys who had said, "We will be your disciple, we will follow you," even they deserted him. And on the cross, the only people that were with him were his mother and a few women and the disciple John. And I struggle with this. It creates that tension because I think to myself, if I was really wanting to do something significant, I would do it differently. I mean, why didn't Jesus come and run for a political office or star in a reality show? I mean, if he really wanted to do something significant, he should have risen to the top of a Fortune 500 company or started a new tech company that created some kind of device that we all just can't live without. But he didn't. In fact, he did just the opposite. And the Gospel of John kind of describes this for us because it tells us an interesting story, an interesting dynamic that was taking place one day where Jesus is really able to tell the disciples, "Okay, I need you guys to understand why I'm doing this the way that I am." There's a story. Jesus is with his disciples. There's two that are brothers. They're called James and John. And this has to be embarrassing for them, but their mom is there. And you know how moms can be. Moms like to really praise their children. I mean, "Oh, my little Ryan, he can't do anything wrong." You know, I mean, that name just popped in my head. I'm not thinking about anybody specifically. Amen, Michelle. So, but this mom comes to Jesus, and she says, Jesus, "You know my boys, they're really special. I mean, look at them. They're just so awesome. You know, Jesus, when this is all done, and we know you're going to have a kingdom, you know that you're going to set things right, and when that happens, and you're the king, Jesus, we know you're the king, but when that happens, can my boys, one of them sit on your right side and one of them sit on your left? I mean, I don't want them in your seat, Jesus. I mean, you deserve that one. But can they be on the right and the left? The next highest seats of honor in this system?" Well, as you can imagine, the other disciples kind of hear about this, and they're not too happy about it. They're like, "Excuse me? I've been here too. I want that seat." And they're mad. They're ticked off about this. And Jesus uses this as the opportunity to teach them. And he tells them, he says, "Listen to this." He says, "You know that the rulers of the Gentiles, they lord it over them." That's what they do. Their high officials exercise authority. That's how they get compliance. That's how they rule, is it's like under the thumb with power. He says, "Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant. And whoever wants to be first must be your slave. Just as the Son of Man," and that's an expression that Jesus would use to talk about himself, "just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many." Now, I put myself in these stories sometimes when I read them because it helps me. And as I'm listening to this story, I can imagine being James and John or Peter or whoever and just kind of going, "What? What'd he say? Slave? I didn't sign up to be nobody's slave. Servant? Who's he talking to? Is he talking to me?" And I can imagine that in that moment, the disciples are kind of chattering among themselves to kind of say, "I thought we were going to organize a political party, that we were going to make Israel great again or take our country back," or whatever you want to say. Nope, that's not what Jesus was talking about. Sorry, I didn't mean to offend anybody there, just thought it was funny. If you didn't think it was funny, you take politics a little too seriously. If there was ever anyone in life who had the right to walk into a room, to walk into a setting and say, "Get me a cup of coffee," it'd be Jesus. I mean, I like to think I'm pretty high and mighty sometimes, but my staff keeps me very humble. They're like, "Get your own coffee." But Jesus was the guy that created this all. He's the guy that put it all together. He's the guy that was coming to rule and to reign. And if there was anyone in the world that ever existed that could walk into a room and say, take care of me, it's Jesus. And Jesus says, that's not what I'm here to do. In fact, he didn't come expecting anyone or everyone to wait on him. He came to wait on everyone else. Think about that. He came to wait even on you, to the point of laying down his own life. He uses this word ransom here, and I think it's important for us to understand this word because it literally means the price of release. And it was often used to describe the money that was paid for the release of slaves. I mean, that's how the disciples would have heard it. You're a ransom for who? And again, to be called a slave, it's like, who are you talking to? I am nobody's slave. I'm not bound to anything, anybody. I'm my own man. I can do my own thing. I'm free. And Jesus talks about this because he wanted to point out, he says, look, we all serve something. We all are a slave to something. Maybe you're a slave to yourself, your own desires, the sin that lives within you, or you could be a slave to Jesus because everyone serves something. In fact, over in John chapter 8, Jesus is talking with a crowd one day, and the very famous verse, many people probably heard it before, the truth shall set you free. Jesus makes that statement. But in that whole exchange, Jesus is talking about freedom, and the crowd is angry. They're like, we've never been anybody's slave since we came out of Egypt. Who are you talking about? And Jesus makes this statement. He says, very truly, I tell you, everyone who sins is a slave to sin. And it's easy for us to immediately step back and think, well, not me. I got this under control. There's no problem with me. But the problem is with that line of thinking. Because it tells me that we really don't understand the power that sin can have in our lives. You see, sometimes we like to minimize sin. We like to see sin as a mistake, as an oopsie, as a goof. My bad. Kind of like a benign tumor, not really hurting anything, just there. But unfortunately for us, what Jesus says is, it says, look, sin is not a benign tumor that it just exists within you that's not hurting anything. It's the malignant kind that left untreated will eventually consume you. You see, sin is what separates us from God. Sin is what pulls us from God. And sin is what destroyed God's good and perfect creation. You see, the way that we are, yes, Jesus loves us just the way we are. But when he looks at us, he also knows that there was a time when creation was good and perfect. And everything you are today, as awesome as you may be, is not everything God intended you to be. He doesn't want us to be burdened by this sin. He wants us to experience the freedom that can be found in him. And for us, sometimes we want to, you know, kill a gnat with a hammer, which is a wrong way to approach it. And we'd think, let's get rid of this stuff then. Let's go in with guns blazing. And Jesus, more like the skillful surgeon, says, no, no, no. I know how to take care of this. I will take care of this, the best and only way to deal with this. And I will lay down my life for you. I will give my life for you in service. Now, it's always a question for me, and I think it's important to ask, because why couldn't, if this is God's creation, if it's his system, why couldn't God just take the magic wand and go, forgiven, woo, everything's done, gone. Be nice, wouldn't it? Like a magic eraser on your life, like, woo, that's woo, gone. Doesn't happen that way. Why? Because forgiveness always comes with a price. I've used this example before, but I think it's powerful. Let's just imagine I'm coming to your house. Some of you are freaked out right now. Oh my God, the pastor's coming over. Why? What have I done? No, no, it's a good visit. We're going to just have tea or something. It'll be fine. But I'm driving to your house, and on the way there, something happens to my car. My brakes go out, and my accelerator gets stuck. And for some unknown reason, the only way I know to stop this car is to run it right through your wall. And I land my car right in your living room. And we get out of the car, and you can tell I haven't been drinking, so it wasn't like that kind of an accident. But you look at me, and you're thinking, okay, what happened? And we get the car tested, and it's like, yeah, man, the accelerator was stuck, the brakes were cut. What happened here was a mechanical failure. Brent, you really did nothing wrong. And you could look at me, and you could say, I forgive you. And I'd be like, thank you. But in saying you forgive me, what you're also saying is don't worry about fixing the mess. Don't worry about putting up the wall and putting up the sheetrock again and the insulation or replacing the furniture and all these things. Don't worry about the incredible cost, because you're saying, I forgive you. I am taking the cost, the burden that's upon you to correct this, and I'm putting it upon me. So you are forgiven. And that is the perfect example of what happens to us in Jesus Christ. You see, sin was the car that ran just right through humanity, and it left a huge gaping hole. And yes, God could have gone, you're forgiven, but that didn't take care of the problem. So Jesus said, I will forgive you. And that big gaping hole, that mess that was left, the price that had to be paid, he said, I got it. I'll cover it. It's on me. I think we have to understand that sin is very deadly and devastating. And Jesus says, I got it. I'll pay that price. I'll pay that debt, that ransom for you. You see, I would want Jesus to come in power. I'd want him to start kicking rear end and taking names. And he doesn't. He comes as a servant. He comes as a servant instead of a sovereign. It's not how I would have done it. And even though Jesus predicted his death and resurrection, and I look at that and I say, yep, I need to just trust anything this guy says. I look at it and I go, but can I really trust that? Can I trust that salvation comes from a servant? That's the first thing. The second thing is just this. If it's in laying down his life as a servant that Jesus brought forgiveness and sin and freedom from sin, then why are we celebrating Easter? What is this day all about? And I think this day shows us the rest of the story, because Jesus calls us to do exactly what he did, to lay down our lives. Why? Is it just about being weak? Is it just about letting everyone else get their way and us being doormats and being walked on? That's another tension. Another tension that exists that we have to wrestle with. You see, there's all kinds of phrases that I think we memorize sometimes. I was looking some up. Two wrongs don't make a right. We know that one. When the going gets tough, the tough get going. Yesterday I heard this. They don't make Disney movies about people that were always ahead. You know, I think those are important phrases. Here's another expression for you to remember. You can only find resurrection when something has died. You can only find resurrection when something has died. You see, Jesus died on the cross, but he didn't stay dead. He paid the price for us to have a way back to God, but it was in resurrection that he defeated death in the grave. He not only gives us freedom and forgiveness, he gives us victory. But in order to experience that, we have to do a little dying ourselves. And I'm not talking about physically dying, but a willingness to give up some things. Our desires, our plans, our hopes, our dreams, our ego, our self-sufficiency. We have to be willing to die a little bit in order to find life. In Matthew chapter 16, Jesus tells the disciples this. He says, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For whoever wants to save their life will lose it, but whoever loses their life for me will find it. What good will it be for someone to gain the whole world yet forfeit their soul? Or what can anyone give in exchange for their soul? See, Jesus is telling us right there, there's always something vying for our attention. There's always something in our lives that looks shiny and sparkly. And with my ADD, I'm always attracted to that squirrel. Yes, I mean, that's what happens. And Jesus knows that about us. There's always going to be something that says, give your life for this. But one of my favorite expressions is just simply this. It's going to be very sad when all you've done is climb your ladder your whole life to find out at the end of your life it was leaning against the wrong wall. And that's what Jesus is addressing. He says, look, there are going to be things in this world that you think are important. And as we think about the way Jesus did it, I was like, no, I want it this way. And Jesus is saying, no, in order to make this happen, I need to be a servant. You see, it's possible that in pursuit of the good life, we actually miss true and abundant life. And notice I didn't say easy life or trouble-free life. And I think sometimes pastors do a great disservice here because they'll tell you, oh, just come to Jesus and everything will be fine. You'll lose 20 pounds, your teeth will straighten up, your kids will start behaving, and you'll get a raise and a car at work. It just doesn't happen that way. Jesus doesn't say, follow me so everything in your life goes right. He says, follow me that so you find what life is like with me. And in the midst of the difficulty and the challenge, you find that you are not alone. You find that amazing things can happen because you find in the midst of turmoil with Jesus, you can find peace. You find in the midst of tragedy that with Jesus, you can still have joy. And you find with the most unlovely and difficult people in life, with Jesus, you can still experience and show love. You see, we live in a world that tells you, be your truest self. Have you heard that expression before? Live in your own truth. That is bunk garbage. Quit believing that myth. Don't live that. In a world that tells you to be your truest self, embrace yourself, stand up for yourself, Jesus looks at you and says this. He says, deny yourself. Talk about something that goes against every fiber of our being. Jesus says, don't do it. Why would he say that? Is it all about him getting people adoring him and, oh, yes, this is what I was after all along? But then we have to go back to the first verse where Jesus said, I didn't come to be served. I came to serve. So it's not about him being exalted and us giving him accolades all the time. So there must be something else. What if it's in dying to ourselves that Jesus knows that's why we become our truest self? And really discover what life is like. But yet for us, so often we spend our time chasing and hoping and living for these things that we think, oh, if I only made a little more money, oh, if only I'll move this wife away and find another one because that's where it'll be, or oh, if I only have this stuff or this vacation, then I will have it. And Jesus is just going, no, stop. Because every time we take that step, we find ourselves being more and more let down and more disappointed and disillusioned. And Jesus is saying to us, deny yourself. Take up your cross. He's saying, die to yourself. And that's that tension that in order for there to be resurrection, something has to die. And I can't help but wonder if sometimes maybe we spend a little too much time doing CPR on things in our lives, trying to keep them alive. Nope, not giving up. And we're just holding on so tight. And Jesus is just saying, let it die. I will be there. I will get you through it. And you'll find life. I think that's the struggle that I have and the tension that we live in. As we die to self, we experience resurrection. And Jesus is not asking us to do anything he wasn't willing to do himself. One final thought as we wrap this up. Sometimes we think it's just all about coming to church and, okay, he wants me to follow Jesus because it's all about this and that and all that. And it's really not. I think there's another step we have to look at. Yes, the first step is following Jesus, dying to self, following Jesus, but it's not just for that. It's for others as well. You see, we've been given life in order to give life. In 1 John chapter 3:16, the writer says this. It says, this is how we know what love is. Jesus Christ laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for our brothers and sisters. Jesus did this. And I find myself thinking, how often are we willing to do this? Because we think we're willing to die to self for Jesus, but are we really willing to die to self for others? Because I'm married, some of my things that pop into mind automatically go to, how would my marriage be different if? And I thought about that. What if in my marriage that Carrie and I had a competition to see who could outserve the other? What if we didn't worry about getting our own needs met? What if my goal every morning when I woke up was, let me see, how can I serve this person the best? How do you think my marriage would be? women, you would be very jealous and you'd be like, I want that man. Don't lie. I mean, there's a lot of reasons. I'm just kidding. But everybody wants that marriage, right? You want that marriage, but we find that marriage hard because why? We're selfish and we want what we want. Take it beyond marriage. What would happen in this world instead of everybody elbowing each other to get out of the way and stepping on each other to get what we want? We modeled the life of Jesus Christ and we said, you know what? I'm going to lay down my life in service to others around me. Doesn't mean we're a doormat. Doesn't mean we just let things fly. No, there's times we have to stand up and speak, but it still means we can do that in being a servant. We've been given life in order to give life. But when we begin to sacrifice for others, I think that's when we truly find fulfillment in this life. There's a lot of tension in following Jesus. Things that aren't as black and white, things that aren't as easy as I would like them to be. Yes, I absolutely believe that Jesus Christ died for me and he rose again on the third day. And yes, I believe that gives him a lot of power and authority, but it doesn't mean that we might not struggle with some of the things he said. And this morning, I've said some things that maybe you're struggling with because Jesus Christ has said if you want to be his disciple, you have to lay down your life and follow him. Do you believe that? Do you believe that Jesus, as the one who rose from the dead, deserves the right and the respect to be able to ask you to lay down your life? And if so, are you willing to do that today? For some of us, we're following Jesus, but we're still holding on to some things. We've given up like 90%, maybe 85%. And today Jesus is saying, it's time to let these things go as well. I can't bring resurrection into your life unless you're really willing to lay it down and let it die. Are we really, really willing to serve others, whether they serve us back or not? Because we're doing so because we're modeling the way Jesus lived for us. And so that it's not just Jesus who says, I came to not to serve, not to be served, but to serve and to give my life a ransom for many. It becomes, and Brent lives his life not to be served, but to serve and give his life for others as well. Would you stand with me as we pray?